One thing I'm going to benefit for that extremely gracious introduction, I too remember fondly our high school days growing up in Teaneck, and as he said, not so different than many of you. And all I can tell you is you are amazingly blessed to have Rabbi Benovitz running this program, to have the amazing Rebbeim, Madrikim, Rosh Yeshiva, the brain power which is only surpassed by the Menschlichkeit and Midos that is in this room and that is part of this program that you are exposed to this summer is something that there will come a time in your life that you'll appreciate it, but it's an incredible bracha. There was a woman in one of my classes once who told me an amazing story. She was a kid, she went to public school, and she came out of public school one day, it was raining outside. So her mom was waiting for her, mom would carpool for her every day. She got into the car and her mom said to her, "I bet I can watch that door. And as the kids come out of school, I could tell you which kids are Jewish and which kids aren't Jewish." She was kind of curious, how could her mother possibly know? So she took that one. So as the kids came out, her mom would say, "That kid's Jewish, that kid's Jewish, that kid's not Jewish." And afterwards she asked her mom, "How'd you know? What did you see? What gave it away?" So her mother said, "It's very simple. It's raining outside. The kids who came out of the building, who came out of school with their books, and they put it inside their jacket to protect it, those are the Jewish kids. And the kids who took their books and they put it on top of their head to protect themselves at the expense of the books, those are the non-Jewish kids." Because you see, it's always been for millennia and centuries and now that we are the people of the book. Jewish people have always been committed to Torah learning. And I have to tell you, that's what's so incredible about what you're doing this summer. The fact that you guys, unlike many of your peers, are not out there traveling across America, not out there playing sports all day, not out there pursuing all kinds of other interests, but that you're sitting here for hours on end every day, steeped in learning Torah and listening to Torah and debating Torah and growing from Torah, I'm absolutely blown away. I can't tell you how impressed I am by each and every one of you. Being here for Shabbos and yesterday morning and a little bit this morning, I got to see firsthand, up close, how seriously you're taking your schedule and how seriously you're taking your commitment to learning. It's really something which is remarkable. As you know, Torah is fundamental. It is a pillar of our lives. Kem chayenu v'orach chameinu. We couldn't exist. It's the air that we breathe. It's the food that nourishes us. It is our sustenance. It's our life source. We could not exist without it. And you are a living expression of it this summer, as you guys have come for 6 weeks to learn Torah. But the question I want to spend a few minutes on this morning, the time that we have together, is that we all know it's really important. And we're all committed to do it. That's why you're here, and your parents are spending lots of money to have you here. But the question is why? Why is learning Torah important? Why is sitting and poring over mesechtas and arguing nuanced details of opinions that we don't even follow necessarily, and debating all kinds of analytical ideas and playing intellectual gymnastics? Why is sitting here for hours on end important? Why couldn't you just come in 20 minutes in the morning? You guys are learning the parak about benching, about zimun. 20 minutes, summarize, what's the halacha, how do you bench with the zimun, and go play ball the rest of the day. Some of you might be thinking, that's not a bad idea. But I'm here to tell you this morning that is a bad idea. And I want to tell you why it's a bad idea compared to what you're doing. Why is learning important? Why is it one of the defining characteristics of what it means? Not only to be an observant Jew, but what it means to be a growing Jew. The learning is not something which is relegated to your school years. You never graduate, you never finish. But that to be a serious Eved Hashem, to be a serious Ben Torah, to be a serious Jew, learning is a lifelong pursuit. And the question is why? Pore over these volumes, postulating and pontificating and analyzing and dissecting and suggesting and rejecting, just get to the bottom line. So I want to share five different reasons with you in the limited time that we have. It's very dangerous to invite a pulpit rabbi up with a microphone and think you'll get to lunch on time, but we're going to try. Reason number one, there's a rare psychological disorder that affects less than 1% of the general population. Less than 1%, and yet it seems to be very prevalent in the Jewish community. You can seem to find it widely, maybe not the official diagnosis, but at least the way that we think of it. And that disorder is multiple personality disorder. multiple personality disorder. To a certain degree, every single one of us suffers from it. We're fractured. We're fragmented. We're made up of so many different personalities at the same time. There's the personality that I have when I'm hanging out with my cool friends. And then there's the personality that I have when I'm hanging out with my friends that enjoy learning. There's the personality when I'm around my parents, or my grandparents, or my rabbi. And there's the personality that when I'm just hanging out with my friends in the dorm. There's the personality I have in the Beis Medrash. And maybe there's the personality I have on the basketball court. We're made up of many different personalities. And in fact, many people may know us differently and may not even recognize the other person we are in a different setting or a different context or among different people. Almost all of us suffer from multiple personality disorder. So I'll tell you something interesting. The word persona, which is the root of the word personality, in its original Latin, the word persona means mask. Mask. In Shakespearean plays, an actor would don their persona. They would put on their mask in order to play a character, in order to play a role in a performance. Because in the end of the day, that's what a personality is. Personality is a mask. We put it on and we cover up our true self. And we wear different masks. And we wear different uniforms. And we wear different clothing. And we wear different personalities depending on who we're with. But that inconsistency, that tension, that conflict, those multiple personalities can be very dangerous, can be very damaging, and ultimately, we hurt ourselves the most because we're never really true to ourselves. We never really discover which one is the real me. I'm always busy that I'm living life in costume. I've never revealed what do I look like naturally, which is the real me. We all know the Avos and the Imos had challenges conceiving. Rivka and Yitzchak were no exceptions, and after pleading and davening, Rivka finally conceived. But she has a difficult pregnancy. The pasuk describes, we're all familiar, Vayisro Tetzua, Banim Bekirba, Batomen and Kein Lamazah Anochi. Children were very active within her. They moved around a lot, and she was very agitated. Rivka was disturbed. These kids are running around. What's going on? Now, the truth is, what agitated her? What bothered her so much? Most pregnant women were very relieved to feel the kids moving around inside her. Rivka is bothered. What is she bothered by? Rashi quotes the Medrash, we're all familiar with it. Vayisro Tetzu means ruts, the running. That she felt when she passed the Beis Medrash, there was a running activity, a desire to get out, to get into the Beis Medrash. And when she would pass the Beis Avodah Zarah, there was running activity, a desire to get out. So what happened? She's bothered. How does she relieve her angst? Vatenech l'drosus Hashem. She goes to consult with Hashem. So Vayomer Hashem lo, God tells her, Shnei goyim bevitnech, Ushnei lu'umim emeayach yiparedu. Don't worry, Rivka. I know you feel this conflict, you feel the activity when you pass the Beis Medrash, you feel pass the Beis Avodah Zarah, but don't worry. I've got good news for you. You're having twins. It's two nations that are going to emerge from your womb. We all know the Medrash, we all know the Rashi, but the Kli Yakar asks a penetrating question, which is so obvious only once you've heard. Asks the Kli Yakar, how do Hashem's words relieve her fear? She's concerned about the movement she feels when she passes a Beis Avodah Zarah, and God says to relax, don't worry. Two nations, Shnei Goyim, twins, relax. And Rivka says, oh, okay, that's what's going on. Okay, no problem. I'll go up to Yitzchak. What is she satisfied by? How is she relieved? How does that solve her angst and anxiety? So the Kli Yakar says something so important. He says, before inquiring of Hashem, Rivka is disturbed because she thinks that she's pregnant with one child, and this one child has a disorder that she sees as so dangerous that she's so upset. She thinks she's pregnant with one kid, and the kid has multiple personality disorder. At times, the kid wants to learn, wants to get into the Beis Medrash, wants to go on and see Swai Kola. And other times, the kid's motivated to follow his own premonitions, even if it means attending a Beis Avodah Zarah, going on some other summer program, which I won't offer a suggestion. This inconsistency, this duplicity, troubled Rivka deep. To think she was pregnant with one child, says the Kliyakar, and that one kid is so split, is so fragmented, stands for nothing, blows with the wind, wears so many personalities. She's so bothered. And so of course she's not happy to hear Shnei Goyim Bevidneich, that the truth is that there's two nations. Of course she's not happy to hear that she has twins and one of them is going to be an Esav, one is going to go to the base of Avodah Zarah, but nevertheless, it is a relief. It's a relief to know that her children will have convictions, that her children are consistent. She is calmed with the knowledge that there's no split personality. There's no multiple personality happening. Unfortunately, we're lucky not to be like Esav, but we're not lucky to be entirely like Yaakov Avinu. Yes, we want to be in the Beis Medrash, that's where we are right now, that's where you have come for your summer, but there's still that side of us that wants to be somewhere else. Beis Medrash is in the way of where we'd rather be. Rather be doing something else, having more fun, hanging with someone else. We have these multiple personalities. Do we want to be the guy who listens to Jewish music? Or we want to be the guy who's up on the latest secular music? Or we're the guy who's nice and sweet and generous and gracious and endearing to all of our friends? Or are we the guy who's willing to offer a zinger, to say something really mean, because it gets a good laugh from the others who are standing around? Which is the real us? Who are we really underneath that mask, underneath that persona? And so the first reason that we learn Torah, the first influence and impact that Torah has on us, its incredible ability to unify our personalities into one coherent, cohesive identity. See, Torah learning is not something which is academic. It's not something which is external to ourselves. It's not an exercise we go through. But Torah learning, if it is engaged in sincerely and seriously, is something that transforms us. And we go from people who learn Torah to becoming Torah personalities. We came in this summer as people who learn Torah, spend time learning Torah, and we leave Torah personalities. Torah is not external, it's not an exercise, it's not something I do an hour, and then go on the basketball court and I'm a different guy, and in the dorm I'm a different guy, and I call my parents I'm a different guy. But when we learn Torah, and we learn Torah the right way, Torah transforms us. Mishnah Navo says that's one of the character traits of Torah. Torah machshar to, Torah has the ability to be machshir. What does that mean, says Rav Chaim Volozhiner in his Ruach HaChaim, his commentary on Pirkei Avos. Machshar to comes from the Shurish kosher. Kosher. If you have a pot, and it becomes treif, and you want to use the pot again, what do you have to do? You have to kasher. How do you kasher something? If it's with liquid, you boil the water, and you immerse it in the boiling water, what happens? The treif taste that was absorbed in the kli becomes purged, and it now is rendered kosher. Says Rav Chaim Volozhiner, Torah machshar to. We immerse ourselves in the fire of Torah, and it kashers us. It purges all those non-kosher ideas and thoughts and temptations and distractions and pursuits and fantasies and imaginations. It kashers and purges all of that. Torah machshar to, it has the capacity to kasher us. Listen to this incredible Gemara in Pesachim. Samach Esam Adais. Gemara says, Rav Yosef biyoma da'atzarta. Rav Yosef on Shavuos would say, Avdi li egla tilsa. He would tell the people of his home, go prepare for me this delicacy, the third-born calf. Omar, he would say, Iloha yoma de kagarim kama Yosef ika b'shuk. If not for this day that I got Torah, kama Yosef ika b'shuk. How many Yosefs there would be in the marketplace? What does it mean, kama Yosef? Says Rashi, kama Yosef. Hare anoshim harbe b'shuk sheshman Yosef u'ma b'ni leveinom. I'd be like any other Joe on the street if not for Torah that has molded me, that has transformed me, that has elevated me, that has enriched me. If not for Torah that has made me who I am, kama Yosef ika b'shuk, I'd be like any other Joe in the street. But the Balei Musar understand the Gemara a little differently. They say what Rav Yosef was saying is, if not for Torah, kama Yosef ika b'shuk, how many Yosefs, how many personalities would I have? There would be the Yosef in the base medrash, and the Yosef in the basketball court, and the Yosef in school, and the Yosef at home, and the Yosef in front of my Rebbe, and the Yosef on the street, and the Yosef with this, and the Yosef. I'd be so many personalities. I'd be so fractured and broken. Kama Yosef Ika Bashuka. How many personalities did we have? And so the first reason to learn Torah is that pouring over the Gemara, engaging in the Mechamta Shel Torah, the war, the battle that you're waging this summer, it serves to remove our masks. It reveals our personalities, our true character, our true essence, our true self, who we are. Through the amazing conversations, through the deep debates, through the illuminating insights that you will hear this summer, if you engage in this series, and I trust you all will, you have the capacity to discover who you are. With the help of your madrichim and rebbeim, you have the ability to help shape a vision for who you want to become. You don't have to be different, depending on whom you are with and where you are. Learning Torah results in being a Ben Torah, and that can animate your personality and who you are wherever you may be, whether on the base medrash or on the basketball court. I'll tell you, Rabbi Benavitz mentioned I was a madrich on Kollel 1996, which for you was a lifetime ago, but for me I think it was yesterday. So I had a wonderful group of guys I was a madrich of, and one of the guys I kept up with for a year or two after, but I hadn't spoken to for many, many, many years, much more than a decade. A few months ago, he left a message on my answering machine at home, and I hadn't called back. He called the next day, and he spoke to my wife. And he described to her, he said, that summer experience on NCSY Kollel transformed me. In our chabura, we had conversations that forced me to confront the truth of life, of who I am, of who I want to be. And he said, you know, I never really followed up with your husband. I never really called to say thank you. I just wanted to speak to him. Now, I'm not sharing that with you. I hope you don't take it as a guy that took a statement. It had nothing to do with me. It had to do with the other guys in his chabura. It had to do with this program. It has to do with NCSY Kollel. And most of all, it has to do with Torah. Torah has the capacity to transform us, to be mashir us, to kashir us, to purge out all of that noise in our life, to remove the personas, the masks, and help us realize who we want to be. Number two. We recite in Shema multiple times a day the mitzvah of Avos Hashem, the obligation to love Hashem. And the Rambam, as well as many others, were bothered by a question. How could you command an emotion? How do you command an emotion? I understand the Torah tells me to take the lulav, put on talis and tefillin, hear the shofar, make kiddush, don't do this on Shabbos, the 39 malachas. I can understand actions. Torah can legislate my actions. But an emotion? What if Rabbi Benavitz walked up to you and he said, start to cry, you're going home tomorrow. Start crying right now. Start crying. You're going home tonight. Start laughing. Are you going home tonight? You can't cry. You can't laugh. Emotions you can't call upon like that. If you do, you're not a very sincere person. So how can the Torah command an emotion? We're in control of our actions and behaviors, not necessarily our emotions. There are many, many answers which are given to this question. But the Rambam famously ultimately describes that essentially the mitzvah of Avos Hashem, the mitzvah of loving God, is not an emotion at all. It's an obligation for an action. Heyachi aderech la'avaso v'yiraso, says the Rambam, b'shah sheyizbonin ha'odem b'masiv u'viruv ha'niflo'am ha'gedolo. At the moment that a person is yizbonin, the moment a person contemplates, the moment a person is cognizant, thinks, intellectually is trying to grasp Hashem and His world, so to know God is to love God. And therefore, says the Rambam, the mitzvah of loving God is a mitzvah to know God. Because if you know Him, then automatically, inherently, inevitably, you're going to love Him. So how do you get to know God? Imagine Chas V'Shalom, you had a grandparent who passed away before you were born. My grandfather died, and my brother was born in the middle of Shiva. My brother, who was a camper on NCSY Kollel, was named for my grandfather. He never met my grandfather. So you had a grandparent you never met. Wouldn't you be desperate to want to get to know them in some way? You never had real contact with them. So there are two ways you might get to know them. What if they love to build with their hands? They were a craftsman. Or an artist, they love to paint. Or a sculptor, they love to sculpt. You would analyze their work You would look at it, you would study it, you would watch it, you would want to understand what genre it was, or what motivated it, or what inspired it. And the second thing is, if you discovered your grandparents' diary, that's the jackpot. You're desperate to get to know your grandparents. You never got to meet them or have contact with them, and now you find their diary? You will imbibe, you will absorb, you will soak up every single word until you've almost memorized that diary because you're so desperate to know that grandparent or chas v'shalom, a parent that you never met. Says the Rambam, that's how you know Hashem. You know Hashem by looking at His words. You guys are heading to Eilat. You're going to go on incredible Tehillim over the course of the summer. You're going to see amazing views. You're going to see incredible, incredible things. You're going to see Hashem's world. You're going to relish it. You're going to love it. You're going to see Hashem through His world. Story told of Shem Shemfall Hirsch took off time to go see the Swiss Alps in his Talmidim. We're critical of the Rebbe. How could you take time off to go see the Alps? So he answered, he said, you know, I fear that after 120 years when I die, I'll come to Shemayim. Kosh Baruch Hu, the Ribbono Shel Olam will say to me, Nu, Hirsch, what do you think of my Alps? I have to have an answer for him. Hashem has a beautiful world and we get to know it. By looking at it, we get to know it through chemistry and physics and biology and through science. But even more so, says the Rambam, you get to know Hashem through His diary. His diary is His Torah. He gave us a glimpse into His mahus, into who He is, into what makes Him tick, into what He motivates Him, into how He approaches the world that He created, how He wants us to think and to behave. Torah is a glimpse into the Ribbono Shel Olam, into HaKadosh Baruch Hu Himself. And we cannot claim to want a relationship with Hashem when we don't care enough to want to understand Him or get to know Him. How can I claim to want to have a relationship with someone if I don't take the time to ask the questions? You're too young to date. Maybe some of the Madrichim are dating. And I'll tell you something, it's not a secret. If you go on a date and you spend the entire day talking about yourself, and you have absolutely no interest in the person you're sitting across from, you ask them no questions, you have no interest in their hobbies, you have no interest in where they went to school or what they're doing in their future, it's not going to be a very good date, probably won't be a second one, and you're not going to make a very good spouse. Any relationship requires an interest in the other party. If we want to be in a meaningful and purposeful relationship with Hashem, if our life is to be a conversation with Hashem, then davening is our talking to Him. Learning Torah is His talking to us. Relationship requires conversation, dialogue. Davening is our talking to Hashem. Learning is Hashem talking to us. Number three, third reason why it's critically important, why it is essential, why it's a core value that we learn Torah. How many of you have ever heard of a ringtone for your cell phone called the mosquito ring? Don't be embarrassed, don't have to be shy. Some of you may even have it. The adults, you guys know what the mosquito ring is? Mosquito tone is a 17 kilohertz sine wave that some of you, teenagers, use on their cell phones to alert them when they have a text message, let's say they're in class and they don't want their teacher or their parent to hear. Because you see, studies show that most adults can't hear above 13 to 14 kilohertz range, but teenagers still can. People's ability to hear high frequencies falls as they age, the older they get. So I heard about this and I went on my computer because I didn't believe it. So I looked it up on the web, I found the mosquito tone online, and I press play and I'm sitting there and I hear nothing, and I press play again, and I think to myself, I'm still a pretty young guy. I said, this whole thing is bogus. And then my kids came running in from the other room and said, stop, turn that off! You're killing our ears! Because it's true. This thing is real. Adults can't hear it, kids can. 17 kilohertz sine wave. So there's an inventor, Howard Stapleton, who has now fought back. He's an adult. So he's created what he calls the mosquito teen repellent. He's created a wave that is so high-pitched, no adults can hear it. Only people under the age of 25 can hear it. And stores and parks in England and Japan so far have begun to use this wave to play it outside places they don't want teenagers to hang out. Because adults will come and hear nothing, and teenagers can't last 2 minutes there. It bothers them so bad. Es advar ma'ela diber Hashem akol ka'achem bahar mitoch ha'esh anon va'arachel kol gadol v'lo yasaf ha'yichtevei mashni luchos avanim Vayitnei Elan. Moshe Rabbeinu describes what was the most seminal event not only in Jewish history, but possibly in human history. The Kadosh Baruch Hu revealed himself in an unprecedented, unparalleled, and since then unrepeated way when he gave us the Torah at Har Sinai. What does it mean, Kol Gadol Velo Yasaf? Moshe describes there was a great voice, Velo Yasaf. What does Velo Yasaf mean? How do you translate it? It's the simple meaning. The Ibn Ezra, the Rashbam, and others explain Velo Yasaf means that it was a great voice, Lo Yasaf, it was never to be repeated. It was a one-time-only occurrence. Kadosh Baruch Hu revealed himself to the world. The infinite appeared in the finite once and one time only, Velo Yasaf, never again. But Unklos translates Velo Yasaf not as not to be repeated, says Unklos, Velo Psak. God's voice that began that fateful day at Har Sinai, Velo Psak. It's never ceased. It's never stopped reverberating. The Ramban agrees with Unklos, brings other psukim as evidence that the Shoresh Yud Samach Fei means never stops, which means that thousands of years ago, Kadosh Baruch Hu expressed his voice, and it has continued to carry until today and beyond. And so I ask you this morning, who's right? The Ibn Ezra and the Rashbam, or Unklos and the Ramban? Kol Gadol Velo Yasaf, does Velo Yasaf mean it was a one-time event only, never to be repeated? Or Velo Yasaf means that it never ceased, that it continues to carry forever and ever. Who's right? The answer, I believe, is up to each and every one of us. You see, we have a choice. We have a choice to make. And it's an existential choice. For us, is Matan Torah, is Har Sinai, is God's voice a part of the past? Is it ancient and archaic and outdated? Is it an ancient part of history? Or Kol Gadol, does God's voice continue to speak to us today? Is it relevant for tomorrow? Like the mosquito tone, a frequency is playing. The only question is if we can hear it. And so each time we open up a sefer, every single time we challenge ourselves to learn Torah, expanding and broadening our wisdom, our understanding, and our insight, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's voice is reverberating in our ears. We are tuning into that frequency, which can continue to be heard. For those who never open a sefer, Torah's ancient history. Har Sinai is part of the past. Put it in the history books. Finished. Racket. Done. But for us, every time we open a sefer, every time we listen to Torah, we engage in Torah, Kol Gadol Velo Yasaf, God's voice is reverberating in our ears. And so reason number three to learn is to continue to feel Hashem's presence, to continue to hear his messages in a contemporary way. If you're an observant Jew but you never learned Torah, Har Sinai is part of history. Torah learning is such a core value because then and only then can our antenna pick up the frequency of the messages of Torah that continue to reverberate and continue to share until today. Number four. We're heading into the home stretch. We're on the back nine. Don't worry. Number four. If I ask you, what defines a good person? How do you define a good person? So if I stop the average person in America and I say, what makes a good American? What would they answer? What makes a good American citizen? What's the answer? Somebody who doesn't steal. Someone who doesn't cheat. Someone who doesn't murder. Someone who doesn't rape. Essentially, the answer of good in secular society is not really good at all. To be good in secular society, you don't have to be good. You just have to not be bad. The Torah mandates not only how to not be bad, but the Torah mandates how to be good. Chazon Ish has a sefer, Emuna Bitachon. It's an incredible sefer. The Hebrew is a little bit hard, but it's come out in translation, and it's wonderful. I encourage you to learn it. So the sefer is famous for its opening essay on that topic, Emuna and Bitachon, defining Emuna and Bitachon. Back in Karen Biavna, I had the schus of learning with Rabbi Resnick, the sefer Betach Bashem, which quoted a lot from Emuna and Bitachon. Very important concepts. And most people think that's all the sefer is about, but that's really only the first chapter. If you keep going, you find the Chazon Ish has an essay that deals exactly with our question. Why learn Torah? Let me think about it for a second. Rabbi Benowitz mentioned we're involved in a lot of outreach in South Florida. We call it the BLS Outreach Revolution. We live in a county with 250,000 Jews. Only 8% of them identify as Jewish. 92% are walking around, don't even realize they're Jewish. So we engage them in outreach, we bring them in. And when they see somebody learning Torah, it's the wildest thing in the world. There are high school teenagers sitting and learning criminal law, civil law, tort law. Now it happens to be you're learning about Zimun and benching this year, so that is a little bit more religiously inspiring. But if you're learning Baba Kama, Baba Metziah, Baba Basra, and you're sitting, you're up to the Daf Yomi, you're learning Chulin, you're going to go through the anatomy of the neck of an animal, that's what teenage kids like to spend their time studying. That's what's interesting. Understanding the laws of damages or lost items or finances, that's what's interesting. And how do you connect to God through that? That's what they always ask me. When you invite a Baal Tshuva into a Beis Medrash, they say, it's a fun experience, it's intellectual gymnastics. But we're in a Reb Chaim, are you connecting to God, when there are two dinim in Shor HaMor? Where do you connect to God by learning about if an ox gores another ox, the tam, muad, the damages? So the Chazon Ish deals with exactly this question in an essay deep into Sefer Emunah and Bitachon. And he says the following. He says, when it comes to moral and ethical choices that we face every day in our lives, how do we know what's right? How do we measure what is the true morality? What's the proper ethic? How do we know not only how to not be a bad person, how do we know how to be a good person? So you'll say, we sit down and we figure it out. The problem, says the Chazon Ish, is that we're finite beings. And with our limited wisdom, we're bound to make mistakes. And we're making mistakes about our core identity, about our very essence, moral choices. Only through learning Torah do we understand the world from the perspective of the Infinite One, of the Creator of the world, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Himself. When I learn Baba Mekam, Baba Mekam, Baba Mitzvah, Baba Basra, when I'm learning the rules of Hashem Saveda, that I understand not based on my limited wisdom, when is it correct to return a lost item, when can I keep it, how do I have to announce it, what's the ethical thing to do? How do I know it's ethical? I'll say one way, you'll say another way, who knows who's right? In the process of learning is the process of uncovering God's vision for His world and how we are to live within it. And so reason number four for learning Torah is to learn not only how to not be a bad person, but to learn how to be a good person. Reason number five, the final reason, and there's so many more. Reason number five. One of the most popular things in America today, proliferating all over, is book clubs. People love book clubs. Groups get together to analyze a novel or a book they've read, to discuss the characters and the plot, to understand the book, how they felt about it, what kind of impact it had on them. Why do they do that? So read a book, you finish it, bring it back to the library, put it up on a shelf, and go on to your next book. Why do people get together in book clubs and share? The answer is because people are desperate for a sense of community. People don't want to feel isolated and alone. They're looking to connect with others and to create a sense of community. And so Lahavdil Torah is the ultimate book club of the world. Those that learn in it, you, all of us in this Beis Medrash, are part of a special community. We are part of a sacred trust. When we learn Torah, we are transcending time and space. We are connecting with people and personalities from hundreds and from thousands of years ago. And we are connecting with people from hundreds of years from now. The Rebbe used to describe so beautifully that for him, when he would learn Torah, he would travel to another dimension. The Rambam and the Ravid were alive. They were in the room next to him. Learning Torah is part of a community. It's the ultimate book club. We're part of a sacred community that we can connect, that passes over generations, that can pass over geography. We're part of a special community. And so why are you spending hours every day learning Torah? We shared five reasons this morning, this afternoon. You're part of a special community transcending time and space. Torah teaches us not only not to be bad, but how to be good, how to lead a meaningful life. Torah is our effort to get to know Hashem, to be on a good date with Him. Torah is our talking to God, our listening to God, while davening is our talking to Him. Torah is our ability to pick up the frequency of the message that continues to reverberate throughout the world. And lastly, Torah allows us to take our masks off, to reveal who we are. And now this summer, we have to synthesize our Torah learning that are translated into Torah living. As we say in Birchas HaTorah, V'ha'arevna, that it sweeten our lives. It's not academic, it doesn't remain in the Beis Medrash. But it transforms us into B'nai Torah. It sweetens our lives. I want to finish with a story that's incredible, that changed my learning, and I hope all yours. I wasn't remembering the exact details of the story, so I called Rabbi Kron last night, and I told him I'm speaking to the most incredible group, and I need you to repeat the story for me, because I originally heard it from him, and he doesn't have it written up, so that I can share it. Because even with all that I said, you might be sitting here thinking, what does my learning matter? You might hit the road, you might get a lot of traction starting yesterday and today, but at some point this summer, you're going to be sitting there frustrated and say, I'm not chapping the Tosfos. Or you know what? Other guys are more masmidim than I am. Or other people ask a better question and cheer than I do. This is not for me. I don't really belong here. And you might get up and think you're going to start to head back to your room because the Beis Medrash is not for you. And I want you to remember this story. There's a camp in upstate New York called Camp Morris. It's for kids. But there was an older guy of all of us who kept showing up to the camp. Some of you may have heard this story from Rabbi Kron. He kept showing up at the Beis Medrash and he was learning. One of the rabbis in the camp, Rabbi Plutchuk, went over to the guy finally to say, what's his story? This is a camp for kids. It's beautiful. You're in the Beis Medrash, but what's his story? What brings you here? So the guy explains, he said, you know, I grew up, I didn't really have a formal Jewish education. I didn't have the opportunity to learn Torah. He said, but now, recently, a few months ago, I was diagnosed with liver cancer. And I'm very depressed, and I'm very down. And very few things could lift my spirits, but I've discovered Art Scroll Gemaras. And all the years I wasn't able to learn because I didn't have that education, but now, thanks to Art Scroll Gemaras, I'm able to open a Gemara. And it's the one thing that gives me life. It gives me vibrancy, it wakes me up. I'm loving the learning. So the rabbi was so impressed. So impressed, this incredible person later in life who opens the Gemara, loves learning, and is in the Beis Medrash in Camp Morris every day. They struck up a friendship. But towards the end of camp, this man, this Balabas, started to be missing a few days here and there. And on the last day of camp, Rabbi Plutchuk saw him sitting in the back row, not his usual seat in the front. There was no Gemara open in front of him, and he looked very despondent. He looked really depressed in camp. So the rabbi went over to him and he said, tell me, what's the matter? You had such a great summer. Why do you look so down? What's going on? So the guy said the following. He said, I've recently learned that my illness is progressing, the cancer is progressing, and it's not long before it takes my life. And I'm sitting here and I'm looking at the Gemara and I realize that even with the Art Scroll, I'm not sure I know what's going on. And in this Beis Medrash with kids a quarter of my age, they know so much more than I do, their skills are so much better than mine, what's the point of it? I'm going to die soon. I don't know how to learn. I can't compete with these other people. What's the point of my coming and learning? I'm done. I'm finished. I'm not learning anymore. So Rabbi Plutchuk remembered that he had recently read a story and he shared it with the man. It was an Italian conductor named Arturo Toscanini, one of the most acclaimed musicians of the end of the 19th, early 20th century. He had a biographer that wanted to interview him, doing a story of his life. So the biographer contacted him and said, I'd like to interview you. So Toscanini said, there's actually a concert tonight, and they're going to be performing one of these symphonies that I used to conduct. If you promise me that you'll come to my room and sit silently while I'm listening in over the phone to this concert, to the symphony, and you don't interrupt and you don't say a word, you're welcome to come and watch, and afterwards we can talk. And so it was, the journalist, the biographer, went to Toscanini, and the symphony began, and a few hours went by. They didn't share a word between them. The biographer was true to his promise. He kept silent and simply observed Toscanini as he was listening to the symphony unfold. And when it was over, the biographer, the journalist, turned to Toscanini and he said, wasn't that magnificent? Toscanini said, no, it was awful. Awful? What was awful about it? Toscanini said, there were supposed to be 120 musicians 15 of them violinists, but only 14 of them showed up. The symphony was terrible. The biographer thought to himself, come on, is this guy such a Balgaiva? Was he trying to show off for me? He's trying to impress me that he could hear out of 120 people playing, musicians, that there's one missing? It's impossible that he heard that. So the next day, he makes contact with the director of the symphony. He says, I'm a biographer, I'm a journalist, I'm a reporter, and I'm doing a story about your symphony, about your orchestra. Tell me how many musicians were supposed to be there last night and how many showed up. So the director said, I'm a little embarrassed that you're asking, but there were supposed to be 120, 15 of them violinists, but only 14 came. The biographer was blown away. He went back that afternoon to Toscanini to continue his interview, and he said to Toscanini, how could you possibly know that? How could you hear that? So Toscanini said the following. He said, there is a big difference between me and you. He said, you're in the audience. You listen to the overall symphony, and to you it sounds great. But said Toscanini, I am in the conductor. I hear every single note from every single instrument. And when one of them is missing, I notice, and it spoils the whole piece. The missing violinist may not matter to you, but I promise you, said Toscanini, it matters to the conductor. The rabbi turned to the man and he said to him, you may not think that your learning makes a difference. For those in the audience listening in the Beis Medrash, maybe if you're not here, you feel that people don't notice. But we're all musicians in Hashem's symphony. We all play our own instrument. We all make our own music through our learning of Torah. And said the rabbi to the man, I promise you, when you are missing, it matters to the conductor. They parted ways. It was the last day of camp that summer. Months went by. It was deep into the winter, and the rabbi happened to run into the son of this man. So he asked him, tell me, how's your father? How's he doing? The son said, unfortunately, my father was nifted, my father passed away. But he said to the rabbi, I want you to know that after that day, every single time he opened his Gemara, before he began to learn, he would say, I'm about to perform for the conductor of the world orchestra. Gentlemen, as we sit down to learn this summer, let's express love to Hashem through our learning. Let's learn how to be good. Let's transform ourselves into Bnei Torah, reveal our true essence, take off our masks. But as we're about to learn this summer, each and every day, let's recognize. When we think it's not going so well, we run into a wall and we're frustrated. We think about going back to our room because what's the point of it? I can't learn as well as the others. This isn't for me. I don't belong. Remember that whether you are here or not in this Beis Medrash matters to the conductor. And every time we sit down to learn, we are playing for the conductor of the world orchestra. Thank you.